Come back after lunch. But we have time for 15 minutes. Direct your question to whomever you want. But the other three speakers, the gentleman's question that our symposium wasn't addressing that wider social issue sort of question. I know certainly you mentioned a little bit about that during your talk. Would you like to address a little bit to that gentleman?
Yes, in the sense that I actually think that the cultural and political context is crucial in this, and I think that's what we've been trying to bring up, especially like when Tena was talking about the Turkish aspects, and I was bringing in the Pakistani aspects, and then Josh putting in the context regarding the comparison with what's been going on. Those are the factors which takes into account not the scientific objections. I mean, so to a certain degree, I mean, I think that's what you were discriminating between the two, like, you know, that, well, we're not talking about objections regarding science, but regarding why people feel uncomfortable about evolution, what factors go into that that objection. And so again, just to sum up, I mean, in the context that a lot of the objections that are coming in deal with the materialist, for example, perceptions, the perceptions about it linked with secularism or with the West.
So far as evolution is concerned, I don't think the oppositions came only from religious groups. Even during Darwin's time, there were scientists who didn't believe.
Yes.
So that's why it's more complex than usual questions about science.
That's correct. I mean, but that's like with any theory. I mean, you have objections within science. But by the early 20th century, and what we call the new Darwinian synthesis, I mean, most biologists pretty much accept it.
Okay, lady in the pink.
Yes, I have a question about the Muslim understanding of the word materialist and the historical evolution of the meaning of that word. Because clearly, you know, the Ibn Kalam and so on, materialism was a word, concept earlier on. And then you get the 20th century, you know, people were talking about using this word. So to what extent it has been the same over. And then I observed there's a book called Napoleon in Egypt, which is a translation of what the French Napoleon said when he arrived in Egypt, and what an alim from the Azhar said back. And when that alim talked back to Napoleon, briefly, he said, "You're a materialist." And I think that Jamaluddin Afghani and others picked up that particular alim and what he said about materialism. So I think dating from Napoleon arriving in Egypt, there was a notion of materialism. It's a new thing.
Okay. I think those issues and the contemporary debate about materialism are actually quite separate. In the sense that, yes, if you look at medieval philosophical disputes among Muslims, you can find, say, that many Muslim philosophers are much more open than Western philosophers to, say, atomic views of seeing things, which has historically been associated with materialism. But in current ideas about when somebody, especially in the popular debate, talks about materialism, the history of that goes not back to medieval times so much as the late 19th century. What people have had in mind with materialism has been very much conditioned with the type of 19th century materialism in Europe of figures such as Ludwig Büchner, or then Ernst Haeckel. This was the idea of materialism that came to the Ottoman Empire when they were debating issues like Darwinian ideas or a broad brush scientific understanding of the world as they were trying to come to grips with. And these types of 19th century materialist ideas were precisely what many of the modernizing and modernist religious scholars reacted to. For example, if you look at the writings of, say, Said Nursi, who was very active around the turn of the century and until into the 50s in Turkey, he first made a name for himself by attacking the materialists and trying to come up with an apologetic that appropriated science for Muslim ends. And you constantly find themes there of him attacking ideas that would come out of the pages of Büchner and people like that. So there is, in fact, perhaps a historical disconnect between the medieval philosophical ideas and what people talk about today. It's quite a separate debate.
And just one comment, because you mentioned Jamaluddin Afghani and refutation of the materialists, but he was responding to Sayyid Ahmad Khan in India. So again, so that goes back to this issue that that debate was not about science. And in fact, what he wrote, what Afghani wrote in The Refutation of the Materialist, it's clear that he had not read The Origin of Species, because the definition he gave what Darwin believes is very bizarre. So again, but his aim was political. His aim was not scientific, so I think that's weird.
Gentlemen in the green.
Actually, I want to single out one aspect, just Dr. Yehav mentioned about the free will evolution between creation, and I want to be specific, a biological evolution. And that's shared actually between Islam and Christianity. I mean, this is something very, very important. I would like to know about the other three parents. Do they share the same opinion of Dr. Yehav, or?
My answer is no.
I would go with no also.
Okay.
I fall somewhere slightly off the chart that he was drawing. The definition of agnosticism that he gave doesn't quite work for me, but close.
That's fine.
And we have our rest of our panelists after lunch, so come back now and ask questions so you can get the whole continuum of people here. We put them in no particular order for any ideological reasons today, but we have a guild of that. Next question. Yes, sir.
Is it really necessary to reconcile evolution and belief? Why is it so necessary? Isn't it more or less probably, let's say, everyone should find their own balance in their life. Choose to believe in one thing or the other. It doesn't really matter.
Certainly in the United States, one of the big things that I get when I'm talking to creationists on school boards is, you know, or someone calls up our offices and wants to talk about evolution, and they'll start off with the litany of, oh, the fossil record says this, and Ken Ham says that. Or, I mean, this hasn't happened, but it could be Parinyaya says this. But you scratch the surface a little bit, and it becomes clear that, you know, that they're reading off of some page somewhere. What they're really concerned about is that second pillar, the idea that if you accept evolution, you have to reject religion. That's what's motivating a lot of the people who are doing that. So addressing that, and until you have that conversation about, you know, how does Ken Miller, who's a Catholic and an evolutionary biologist, how does he bridge that? How does Francis Collins, who's an evangelical Christian and the director of the Human Genome Project, how does he reconcile these two parts of his life? Until you have that conversation, they're not going to hear anything else about the fossils. So it's an important first step in that conversation, I would say. That's from a different perspective than the Islamic perspective, perhaps.
So basically we are in societies where there's a false choice, because in my opinion, if the choice is everyone has the will to choose whatever they do, we are in societies where we should not feel that religion is threatened, as long as whoever wants to practice whatever religion says, okay, the other can believe whatever they want, but my religion is fine. It's clearly like the threat. That's why we are trying to, okay, let's find a common ground so everybody is happy.
Let me interject over there. To a certain degree, what you're saying is perfectly right. And I don't think anybody over here who's in a position of, say, defending evolution in science education is arguing that anybody should change their beliefs or something like that. I'm not a religious person. It's none of my business to tell anybody what to believe. I don't have any stake in the matter. But on the other hand, I get paid because I get to walk up to a blackboard and teach physics to people. And so because of that, I have an interest in at least the public's understanding of science being accurate. Whether they accept this or reject it on religious or ideological grounds, that is nothing that I have much control over. But I would at least like for this debate to be informed by science properly, and people like Hari Yahya are not helping in this regard.
Yeah, I told them, don't misunderstand me. That's what I mean. Let's put the facts on the table, and whatever people want to believe, it's their point.
But the thing is, you have to remove the threat. That's the long as the threat is there, you have a problem.
But if I can just say one thing. But there are some challenges that exist. And I think that's where it needs to be addressed. And that's what I mentioned, like, now that a serious debate hasn't taken place. Now, in theory, science, what I believe, because I'm a scientist, like, you know, that should be done simply for the sake of science. Like, you know, that, well, hey, there are unsolved questions. Like, you know, let's figure that out. But it occasionally goes to a place where it can potentially challenge something that is in religion. And let me take a little bit of a non-evolution example, origin of the Earth. If an idea is out there that it just formed out of nothing, the Earth, well, we have a really good explanation from the science, from astronomy coming in, how the Earth was formed. So if a religious concept connects to the formation of the Earth, then we are, then there is a conflict. Then religion needs to figure out what to do about it. So I think it's not that. So there are some places where these questions come into play, and that's where people have to think about it.
Last question before lunch break. I won't translate.
You have to know that I'm in TNN. But that is also where the energy of my life comes from, in biology and in ma'anami, in the gym ma'anami. But then it's a hope matter. هل كان الحب معروفة بأبعاده يوميا اليوم ما يخص مثلا
So the question is very interesting. It's is evolution only in the realm of biology? Does it have to do with love as well? Things as between as he states, between husband and wife, of course. is love also subject to evolution? So I don't know if anybody wants to answer that.
Well, there's actually a considerable literature in areas like evolutionary psychology and cognitive science that ties into evolutionary considerations. But it's not; these are not sciences that are nowhere near as mature as, for example, the evolutionary biology of ants. So come ask that question again maybe a couple centuries down the road and we might have a more interesting answer for you.
It's hard to do a random experiment with mating behavior in humans. So
given the number of books and my own experience, given even a century, I'm not sure we'll
understand. I may be over-optimistic, that's right.
Comment on this topic?
No, but if you come back at 2 o'clock, you can make your comment and we may have more answers and we'll certainly have more panelists. Thank you and thank you.